This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Inc.com.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way each and every day. That's Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, you know, it was a lot of events over the weekend, a lot of action-packed events, basketball playoffs, NHL playoffs, and, of course, the big fight between Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. And something else, it's not really interesting, came out of the post-fight press conference. Floyd said there would probably be no fight with Manny Pacquiao because of his involvement with Bob Arum. So he thinks that Bob Arum is the major impediment between Pacquiao and him having a fight. So that's what he says. So we may not see one unless somehow Pacquiao can get away from Bob Arum, but that's his promoter, and he's been dealing with Arum, and he seems like he likes Arum. So we'll see if anything happens on that front. But right now, it definitely doesn't look like Pacquiao and Mayweather will get together and fight. But that could be the most lucrative fight of this century, that's for sure, the most lucrative pay-per-view fight. As I told my good friend Tim Stout, that I couldn't pay for that fight. I mean, it's $70 now for a fight. I mean, yes, you have to get with a bunch of friends and such. We can always do that. Or you can go to the theater and watch the fight, because it was in theaters over the weekend. But $70 is an awful lot of money for a pay-per-view card. But give us a call if you want to talk about the fight. I didn't see the fight, of course. I'll watch it this weekend when it comes on Saturday, this coming Saturday on HBO. I don't mind waiting a week, in all honesty, to see a big fight. And from what I heard from everyone, that Cotto fought a very good fight. He's able to, Mayweather's swelling under both of his eyes. They're swollen up. And so he counted of himself very well, even though everyone says he won the decision, but Cotto counted for himself very, very well. So it was a very good fight by Miguel Cotto against Floyd Mayweather. Hey, give us a call. Talk a little sports with us. Doug Fister goes tonight for the Tigers. His first start back from the DL. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll see here how that goes. But hopefully his start with in Toledo went okay last week. So this will be his first start back in the majors. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Al Horford came back, scored 12 points, but wasn't able to help Atlanta as they went down to Boston. Boston's been playing very well. 3-1, and New York somehow got a win. Somehow they got a win against Miami. And now New York trails 3-1. So something's perking up, but, in the NBA, when you look at the whole NBA playoffs, there are no upsets. You know, the might makes right, and the best teams win. And, it's very hard when you're an underdog or a team that maybe has a little less talent than what the team you're playing. It's hard for you to win that game. Every now and then you can pull a game or get an upset, but to just pull off and get a straight-up win 4 out of 7, that's almost impossible to do. So, but in the playoffs, that's the way they are. Now, in the NHL playoffs, well, we saw one number one seed go down to an 8 seed. St. Louis went down to the Los Angeles Kings. And they were swept. I mean, the Kings are looking great. They're looking very impressive. They are. So that's just good one to look at. I mean, let's go over the NHL playoffs right now and the NBA playoffs. Right now, Philadelphia has a 3-1 lead over Chicago. Miami has a 3-1 lead over New York. And Indianapolis has a 3-1 lead over Orlando. And Boston has a 3-1 lead over Atlanta. In Washington and New York are tied at 2-2 in the NHL. And Philadelphia has a 3-1 lead over Nashville. And the New Jersey Devils have a 3-1 lead over the Flyers. But those could always, you could see those being evened up at some point. You know, it's going to be hard. You get a 3-1 lead in hockey, it really gets hard to try to close a team out. So you might see Nashville and the Flyers get another win in their playoff series. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. I know a lot of you be looking at the baseball game tonight to see if the Tigers can do anything. Can they come back? Delmon Young played yesterday. He didn't do much, of course, but he might be back in the lineup. But he was 0-for-4 yesterday. And for all of you Brandon Inch fans, of course, Brandon Inch hit a home run yesterday out in Oakland. He hit a home run there, his first home run. So that's not too bad. I know there's a lot. Brandon Inch has a lot of fans, and he has a lot of haters here too. That's for sure. So you get a chance to see some of that, and you know, we get a chance to talk to him as well. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. And, well, let's see. Well, we got I guess you could say it's an email in, but, talk about going for perfection, MSU softball. Keep your fingers crossed that the MSU softball team will get to join the Detroit Lions by going 0-for-4 this Big Ten season, making it a memorable season. So that's one of our Smart Aleck comments from one of the Smart Aleck fans who often emails me from time to time. And so we'll see. You know, it's very, when you don't do well, it's just very sad. It's the teams that when you don't play well, it just is very, very, very sad. Well, let's go to the phones, and we've got Victor over in Lyons. Victor, how you doing?
Earl, how you doing?
Okay.
What'd you think about that fight between Mayweather and I cannot pronounce the other boxer?
Yeah, Cotto, Miguel Cotto, yeah. From what I read about it, I didn't see it, but from what I read about it, it was a pretty good fight, and Cotto was close. You know, he was close. I mean, he didn't win many rounds, but he did win a few rounds, and he hurt, I guess, Mayweather, because they say he was bruised under both eyes. So he was bruised
probably
under both eyes.
Probably early in the fight, I would imagine.
Hmm?
Probably early in the fight.
Yeah, probably was early in the fight. That's what it sounded like from the reports I was reading.
Okay, well, you know I'm blind.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And I was lucky enough to go to a couple boxing matches when I used to live in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
And the last fight I was at, Don King was actually there. And, I had a friend of mine that could see with me. But I waved at Don King because my friend told me he was up somewhere, and I waved at him, and he waved back at me. It was kind of cool. I never actually met him, but when the fight started, I was right, like, probably about 15 feet away from the scorer's table. So, I mean, I was almost as close to the ring as a spectator could get.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot different watching a fight on TV or listening to it on the radio than it is actually to be live.
Oh, yes.
The energy, the electricity.
Yes.
Especially when you got a good fight going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can actually hear the fighters throw punches like the flurries and stuff like that. It,
right.
It is a whole lot different experience live than it is on TV.
Oh, without a doubt it is. You get to see all the nuances and everything, see it in purpose. Or you can hear
boxing, them. Boxing and wrestling have a lot in common, you know. And you give my best to Seth and Andre when
okey-dokey.
You talk to them, okay?
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Hey, a pleasure talking to you. Hope I get a chance to meet you in person sometime.
Well, let's hope so. Hopefully we can make that happen one day.
Have a great day, my friend.
You too. Yep, bye-bye. And let's go to Dennis. Dennis, how are you going? Did you see the fight Saturday night?
Earl, I was on vacation from last Saturday till early Sunday, so I didn't see the fight. I will be watching it this weekend, and I talked to some of my buddies. I tried to make it back, but I just getting back from the airport in time to see the fight Saturday night. But I talked to a couple buddies and my father-in-law who did see the fight, and they said it was a very good fight. Cotto showed a lot of toughness and heart, but he just didn't have the skill set to keep up with Mayweather.
Yeah, Mayweather's just too fast.
Too skilled. So it's no surprise. I did want to talk to you about boxing and also football. I did record the Seth Mitchell fight, and I watched it yesterday. Now, did you have Seth on?
I had him on Wednesday.
You had him on Wednesday. Okay, I wish I'd heard that fight. Show, but anyway, I want to tell all my Spartan friends out there, like Don and Bert and Woody and all those Spartans. If they don't like boxing, they should like Seth Mitchell.
Yep.
He comes in the ring. He's got on a green and white Spartan logo T-shirt. Mm-hmm. Then he's got another shirt that says, "Bleed green till I die." I mean, he's representing the university, no question about it.
Yep.
The commentators commented on his college background, his Michigan State experience as a linebacker, his degree from Michigan State. So he really promotes the university for all these Sparties out there. But, Earl, I got to tell you, as a fighter, I'm starting to be really impressed with this young man. He's looking to me like a top 10 fighter right now as we speak. And that right, he took a right hand in the first round and looked like a safe falling out of a third-story window, hit him flush in the jaw.
Yep.
And he absorbed that punch. He came back in the second round and won that round in dominating fashion. And then knocked down, I think his name was Weatherspoon.
Tim's cousin.
Yeah, knocked him down twice in the third round to win a TKO. Now, Earl, I attribute that to that left hook he hit him with was a Joe Frazier-like left hook.
Yep.
And he's got a great right hand. His boxing skills are really developing. It's dramatic how far he's come along just since he first was on ESPN. But the one thing I say that separates him from all the other young contenders out there, Earl, is his conditioning.
Yes.
That right hand that he got hit with, he was only able to take that because of his conditioning and the fact that he was able to take that comeback and look as sharp as he did in those rounds, to me, separates him from a lot of other young contenders out there. And I definitely say within another two or three good fights, he might just be ready for a Klitschko-level chance.
Yeah, I agree with you because he might, and that's the thing with and he's such one thing that also separates him from the other fighters. He is a devastating body puncher, you know, especially for the big guys. You don't see too many big guys going to the body.
Oh yeah, he took care of the chitlins, no question about it. He beat Weatherspoon up to the body, kind of chopped him down, then he went to the head. Where Weatherspoon had a chance in the fight, but he was head hunting.
Yep.
Because he had Mitchell hurt in the first round, but I'm a big fan of his. I'm impressed with him. I think he's a top 10 fighter now, and if he continues with the right track and gets the right type of fights and keeps working hard, I think he's a championship contender at the highest level, Earl.
Yeah, they talk. He might be back in the fall fighting, and right now they're talking about fighting Michael Grant. You know who you fought for the title at one time.
Yeah. I think that would be a good next logical step. I don't want to see him rush into a Klitschko fight because, you know, we've seen guys do that and it doesn't work out. But, you know, sharpen his tools, get a little bit more experience. I think he could stand in there with him.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, because he told me that was such a good learning experience. He had never been hit as hard as hit against Witherspoon, and you know it was shaking up. I said, that touched you. Yeah, he said, yeah, he touched me. I said, I'd never been hurt like that. He said, I hope he doesn't get that experience again. He said he's glad he's had it because now he knows what he has to do to withstand a punch. You know,
he doesn't want to forget. Withstanding it,
he doesn't
want to get hit with because he got hit with three or four overhand.
Yes, he
like
did.
That. And you know, you can't take that from a Klitschko or any other top level heavyweight. So the thing is, sharp that up. Go look at the film. Get in the gym. Listen to his trainer, who seems to be doing a good job, and know how to avoid that situation. And I think you'll be fine. Now, Earl, I'm going to go from talking about a sport that's designed to give you head injuries to one that does give you frequent head injuries, and the hypocrisy. Maybe it's my own, too, because I love boxing.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about the hypocrisy of the NCAA. Everyone's all excited about this proposed end to the BCS, and this playoff system seems to be evolving. Everyone's talking about the top four teams or the top 620, whatever they're going to come up with, and the rationale for making it fair, and how much money and how much acclaim, et cetera, et cetera. But no one's talking about the elephant in the room. You add those additional games, you add the logical impact is going to be increased exposure, increased chances for head injuries. And you can see we're not just talking about concussion, but all this new injury and all this new information about CTEs, you know, the obvious implication that you don't have to have a concussion necessarily to have life-changing head trauma resorting from repeated head blows to the head. And so you have these guys playing for free, taking all this punishment for our entertainment and enjoyment. And the owners, you know, the NCAA and the bowl owners, pocket money, and again, they're paying. They're playing for free. They're playing for nothing additional to their already meager reimbursement. And no one's talking about whether or not this is a good idea. Even if you don't mind the fact that they're exploited economically, is it a good idea to risk their health for an additional 2, 3, 4 games, whatever it is, just so we can sit back and be satisfied that there is a quote-unquote legitimate national champion?
No, I would agree with you with that for sure. There's no reason to it, but unfortunately, as you know, it's probably going to go through because so many people want it. And that's the problem. So many people want it, and I'm starting to wonder how. As much as I love football, and starting to second guess myself in football, because I mean I can see a lot more mothers who will start stepping up and telling that their son won't be able to play, and especially in college, when you one of the first things you hear when you're a college football kid and you've been recruited and you come on campus, one of the first things the coaches tell you have to learn to play hurt. That's one of the first things out of their mouth at every school. The coaches tell you got to learn to play hurt. You can't play that game healthy. So what does that teach you? You teach right from you come from high school. You might be an All-American, but you never got hurt. But here, bam, you get hurt in college, and they're telling you, hey, you got to go out to practice. You got to play with injuries. You got to play hurt. It's some way, especially in college ball, that's the way it is. So
ignore that injury. Mm-hmm. And you know, the cumulative effect is if that guy goes on to an NFL career, I think the damage that he took in junior high school, college is just as important to his physical well-being as what he incurred in the NFL. And Earl, I'd be interested to see people start tracking the injuries just to college players. I know a few years ago there was an article in the New York Times about a Boston College player who never played in the NFL, committed suicide in his play. Offered his brain to the brain trauma research team was studying it a few years ago. I think you remember that. Mm-hmm. And he had traumatic brain injury. So, I mean, come on. You know, let's talk about at least throw that part of the equation into the factor into the evaluation as to whether or not we're going to have a playoff system. How about the player's safety? You know, if you want to ignore that after it's evaluated, okay, go ahead with it. But at least let's talk about it. Let's not pretend that it's not there. It's not a factor. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, no, that's good. Okay, thanks a lot, Dennis. Okay, yeah, bye-bye. And yes, Dennis is definitely right. We definitely should be considering it, looking at it, evaluating it, because football players have to know, especially when you enter that realm of college football, you've got to play hurt. You're going to all the practices. Now, one thing that I started thinking of, Dennis and many of our other fans out there, I started thinking about how about all those kids who are on the practice squad, who are the fourth, fifth, sixth stringers, who get beat up in practice every single day, and they're the ones who really don't get anything for it. They just want to be a part of the team, and they're a scrub, and they're getting beat up every single day in practice, and they get nothing for it. Now, how many of those kids, I wonder, coming out of playing football and becoming, you know, get healthy or not get healthy, but are injured? how many of them have some kind of brain injury, some kind of concussion or some, because they've been hit all these times in high school and in college. And especially when you get to college, you're just basically a hitting dummy, basically just holding up the bags. It's a big problem for people trying to get healthy in the college level. Well, let's go back to the phones. Let's go over to Kalamazoo and Dave. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. I was sort of shocked and amazed at how many people actually saw the Mayweather fight for what it was a pretty good fight rather than the screams of no action.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I thought that if nothing else, that sort of locks Mayweather in as probably one of the best pure boxers since we've at least been able to film boxers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just does not get hit.
Right.
I mean, Cotto really won if you wanted to count grazes and misses. And he looked busier than the Dickens, you know. But you looked at his face, and, Mayweather had some blood coming out of his nose. And
yeah.
Cotto's ear, I'm sure, was about three times the size it was before he went into the fight. Especially, where Mayweather just pounded that ear with his right all night. And that's gotta hurt. And the other thing I was gonna say is, one of your guests that you've had on over the years that I always enjoyed and who passed away was Bert Sugar.
Yes.
And I couldn't help but think that had Bob Arum left this veil of tears before Bert Sugar, we'd probably be seeing the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, which we may not ever see because I really think Mayweather's got something. Mayweather and De La Hoya have got something very much against Bob Arum, but I think the way Bob Arum's got his finances set up, he'll make out much better with Pacquiao fighting two or three lesser than fighters than ever having one big mega fight with Floyd Mayweather because he knows that he's not going to be able to buffalo them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you agree?
Oh yeah, if he fights two or three more, he's only 33, so he can get two or three more fights. Now he may not draw as much as a Mayweather fight because Mayweather's right now is the hottest and the biggest pay per view draw right now. So yes, he can get two or three fights. It won't draw as much, but he should be able to make a pretty good living and a pretty decent pay cut because a lot of people were going to come and see Pacquiao, even though they want to see him against Mayweather. But since that might happen, a lot of people will pay to see him fight some of the other guys.
Oh, and as I said, I think at this point in time, it isn't how much Manny Pacquiao gets, it's how much Bob Arum gets is being the determining factor. And every once in a while, he'll send out Freddie Roach for his, give him a script and tell him what to say, and Freddie knows where his paycheck comes from, so he'll pretty much read it verbatim. The other thing, I guess, I'm late to the party, but two things that Dennis brought up. One was Seau.
Yeah.
I think that you're probably going to discover, chances are, if his family would allow for more comprehensive study, I think, a guy who plays 20 years in the NHL, NFL, and played the way he did, it's probably a safe bet that he had his more than his fair share of concussions.
Right.
However, I also think that, Mike Golic brought this up, very, very hard for a guy who probably started playing football in the seventh grade, maybe before, and then played 20 years in the NFL.
That's a lot of hits.
Suddenly, all that's gone. What do you do with your life?
Exactly.
And I believe you also had a divorce, which is a tough thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not so quick to say, it was the brain injuries. I'm sure that, if those in fact happened, which I suspect they did, might have been a contributing factor, but I will never discount the point of a 20-year NFL NFL guy suddenly waking up every morning and the guy who wanted to be at the gym at 4 o'clock has no reason to be at the gym anymore, and I think that hurt him. One last quick thing about this college playoff thing. In my perfect world, I would have the old guys in the polyester suits. They want to keep their stuff. Secondly, part of it's me just thinking that the Rose Bowl is the best of the bowls anyway, money wise and everything else, which means it's the best for the Big Ten and the Pac-12. But I don't see if they're going to be so darn insistent on a playoff, why you can't have a four-team playoff just based on the existing bowls as they go through, and then you have two more games. And those two more games have nothing to do with the polyester suits and the bowls other than the venue. And they don't necessarily have to deal with those venues if they don't want to. They could go to a Dallas or go to another indoor venue to play those games and just make all that money to the BCS, and every Division I football team would divide those proceeds up equally and would probably, the only negative thing I see in that is probably the draw from those three games would be, the money from those three games would be so significant, it would probably put some of these lesser bowls out of business because the athletic departments would make more money off their BCS take than they would having to pack up kids and practice and shoot them over to,
Everybody likes that bowl experience. I mean, the kids really like that bowl experience. I mean, and going to a bowl game.
I know, Earl, but you got to admit that is probably one of the major drains. The only people making money on that right now are the bowls, and it's just too bad that they can't make some kind of guarantee.
Yeah.
For the teams, but I agree with you. I don't necessarily like it. I agree with Dennis that. It's just more opportunities for these guys to get hurt.
Yep.
And with nothing to go. And I'll leave you with this. Long ago, Michigan State linebacker who went on to have a nice pro career, said something I'll never forget. I says, "Well, what have you learned here?" He was a senior, ran out his eligibility. I says, "What have you learned?" He says, "I learned the difference between playing hurt and playing injured."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I almost always played hurt.
Yep.
Rarely, I was fortunate I didn't get injuries." And I think that, a lot of those hurts are at the ragged edge of injuries, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Time 32 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
In the coming week on Talk of the Nation, the difficult decisions families face with kids and grandparents in need of care. On Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us, and on Thursday, a brutally honest look at military marriages after a decade of war. I'm Neil Conan. All that and much more in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather. A high of 67 today. Rain is likely with a chance of thunderstorms. Cloudy tonight. Maybe showers and isolated thunderstorms. The low 52. Tomorrow, the high 68. Windy and partly sunny Tuesday. Partly sunny Wednesday, but maybe some light rain with a high of 60.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Now, coming up at 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock, we'll be chatting with Michael Rosenberg. Michael, who I think he's still partly employed by the Detroit Free Press, but he's moving on to Sports Illustrated now and a Sports Illustrated writer. So we'll talk with him, Mike Rosenberg, coming up at 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Yes, even though this is the off season, there's a lot of discussions going on in football, especially with the playoff system and the potential of a playoff system. We don't know how it's all going to factor out. It could be the plus one system. It could be just like Dave said, we might have two games after the bowl season. It's really going to be hard. It's hard. We know the bowl season isn't going anywhere. That's for sure. We're always going to have the bowl. People love the bowls. Schools love the bowls. They love one thing that we've never talked about when we talk about the bowls and the bowl system. There's one thing that's why the schools, even though they may lose money on the bowls, they get all this free publicity. You're talking about a three-hour commercial through our commercial about your school and your university. So no matter what school, if your school gets in a bowl game somewhere, that's a 3-hour commercial for your institution. And you can't buy that kind of free publicity. You just can't. So a lot of schools, and a lot of schools, when they go to a bowl game or the NCAA tournament, you can look at it and see that most schools, they profit from that by the increase in the number of people who apply for entrance to their institution. The entrance requirements, their entrance exams, and the people, really, it goes up. It skyrockets when a team goes to a bowl game. I've checked every year, Michigan State, whenever they've gone to a bowl game, they get a lot more people applying going to Michigan State. And that happens for colleges all around the country. And people say, well, why don't kids just go? And I've been asked that this many times. Why don't kids just go and speak and apply to the schools they want to go to? But no, kids like to go to schools that they perceive as being winners. When Boston College won back there, when they had Doug Flutie, the number of applicants just went up dramatically. People trying to apply to get in Boston College. When Northwestern went to the Rose Bowl for those 2 years, the application, those applications went up. They almost doubled. People trying to get in Northwestern. So that's the thing. If you get to a bowl game and you go to a prestigious bowl game, that's such free publicity for the school, of course, and for that person and for those people. And that just helps the school so much. It helps tremendously if you go to a bowl game in ways that, many of us just don't see. But the schools get a big, big advantage if they get to go to a bowl game or they go to an NCAA tournament. It really helps the school get more quality admissions. Some schools, when they get so many people applying, that they can raise their standards. A lot of schools will raise their standards because of the admissions, because all the admissions they just, that's a way to weed some people out. Right now, let's go back to the phones and go to Saginaw and talk with Michael. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Earl?
Okay.
I was listening to one of your programs on point today, and they was talking about hazing and especially the incident with the marching band down at Florida A&M where they arrested 7 people and some people turned in. They was talking about it in sports, too. They talking about how sports teams and the hazing and everything. Now, Earl, I know you be around campus and everything and high school stuff. Do you think that's a big problem in mid-Michigan?
No, not in Michigan, no. The hazing stuff is primarily a big problem in the southern schools. It's been a tradition down there for so long. And yes, the hazing does goes on the campus of here of Michigan State. There've been hazing incidents. I don't know how much it goes on now, but I would assume that it may go on. Maybe not as strong as it does in some of the southern schools, but it certainly has happened here before. So I hope it doesn't go on. It's not going on now. I hope the parents of that hazing suit in California, in Florida, they want the band to be not being able to march until they get something that they get out there and they just finally get to a point where hazing will not be allowed. And that's what the family's hoping for, because like I say, it goes on, constantly goes on, and they really haven't done anything about it. So we'll just have to wait and see if that will happen and if anything will be done about it down there.
No, because up in Saginaw now, I'm around a bunch of teachers and professional type people who went down to those schools, went to them black universities down there. And, I asked them about hazing every now and then. They laugh at it and joke about it and everything, talking about this and that or the other. But I just think about all that, this incident of hazing, I think it occurs more than the kids are willing to admit, because it seems like the administration don't take it as seriously. What you think about it?
Well, I mean, it probably does. go on quite a bit. I'm not sure how much the administration hangs on it, but, you know, how much do they know about it? That's the thing. You just don't know how much the people who are in charge of the universities even actually know about it. You know, if the kids want to do it, and yes, it happens, and that's part of your pledging initiation, is if you take some hazing, you won't spill the beans, you won't tell on anybody, and that's part of it. So it probably goes on, and most people will not tell because they don't want to be ostracized. They want to get into the fraternity. So if they have to keep some secrets, they'll keep secrets.
All right, Dan. I'm going to talk about sports. Up here in the Michigan paper up here, they were showing that Northwood in Division II built an indoor football facility. And I just thought about it. I said Grand Valley, Northwood, and the GLIAC indoor football facilities. Do you think this is just going to be a trend where every school in Division II also going to build them an indoor football facility?
Well, they might, Michael. That's a possibility because everybody's trying to get better. So if you can better yourself with an indoor facility, you will, and many schools will do that to help improve their program and improve their games. That would certainly help them playing up here in the North. It can't help but enhance your program. So, yeah, I can see a lot more, even the Division II teams, starting to build in their own football facility. The time, 41 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Thousands of listeners responded after Teresa McBain's public confession on All Things Considered.
I'm a pastor currently serving a Methodist church, and I am an atheist.
I'm Neil Conan. Teresa McBain joins us. Losing Your Faith. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Rain is likely, maybe thunderstorms too. The high today in the mid-60s. Tonight, the low 52 with cloudy skies. A chance of overnight showers and isolated thunderstorms. Windy and partly sunny Tuesday, the high 68. Wednesday will be partly sunny with a chance of light rain and a high of 60. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Now let's bring in our good friend Michael Rosenberg. And Mike has been a longtime columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Now Mike is moving over to Sports Illustrated. So Mike, congratulations, Mike, and I'm glad to be reading you still in Sports Illustrated. Now, will you still do some work for the news, or are you just going to be strictly at Sports Illustrated?
I'm leaving the Free Press. I would just be at Sports Illustrated, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good. They've got another good writer, so, you know, you've been a good writer for a long time, and I think many of us will make that adjustment in reading you in the Sports Illustrated.
I appreciate that. Thank you to everyone that's read me over the years. I've got a couple more weeks here at the Free Press, and a writer without readers is, unemployed.
Yeah.
So thank you very much to everybody.
Yes. Hey, now what do you think about this whole college situation? You know, we're talking about a plus one, a plus two, a add two. You know, maybe this whole college situation. I'm assuming eventually we're going to have a national championship, but I don't know. How do you think it's all going to play out?
Well, it looks like we're going to get a four-team playoff. It's just a matter of the format, the locations of it, the formula for picking the four teams, whether it's a plus one, however that works. And I think that's the right approach. It may expand eventually, and that's okay, but it took college football like 80 years to get to this point, so it's going to move slowly. I was a guy who for years said that the old system, the bowl system, was the best. I thought that was the most fun. I thought it was a little quirky, but I was good with that. Obviously, you can't go back to that. There's just too much of an interest in the playoff, too much desire for it. And I do think a playoff's better than the BCS. So I would like to see semifinal games on home field. I think that would be a lot more fun. I think it would get a much better atmosphere. I think it would bring cold weather into the equation. And then a championship game presumably would be on a neutral site, and I'm okay with that. I that's just my opinion. The Bulls are obviously still trying to get a stake in it, so we'll see how it plays out.
Yes, I don't think the Bulls are going. You know, the Bulls have been with us for so long, so I can't see the Bulls going anywhere. They'll be a part of it, or they'll be, you know, like on the fringe of it. We'll still have all these I want to see the bowls get definitely reduced. I mean, we've got too many bowls now. If we could lop off about 5 bowl games, that would probably be sufficient. But who knows if that'll ever happen, because once you get some, you know, it's very hard to get them out. And the problem with all the bowls is they you were required to buy all these tickets, and that, you know, and so many schools end up taking a bath on these bowl games because they're required to buy so many tickets, because a lot of fans don't buy these tickets to go to bowl games.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's a real value to the bowls too. I think in traveling for several days, getting away, it's an experience a lot of players don't otherwise have. I think it's a fun thing for the fans. I think if you attend to the university, it's a cool thing to go to a bowl game and to be there for several days with your fellow alums. And I think it's a lot of fun. I think you do lose something there with that. And I hope they keep them. But having said that, if your goal is to create a playoff system, you have to create the best playoff system, period. You can't just cling to something you used to do. And I don't think the idea is, well, how do we sort of blend the bowls with a playoff system? To me, what you do is you say, we want a 14 playoff. We're going to establish that first, and then whatever we do with the bowls can fit around that. And if you have a 14 playoff, from what we've seen, people will still want to see the number 5 and number 18 play in bowl games. I mean, they've watched them in the past. I watch all those bowl games, even the lousy ones. I can't help it. I'm sort of an addict. I've got a problem there. But, you know, people will watch games that don't have an impact on the national championship. They will. I mean, we saw that with Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl the last 2 years. I watched it. I assume other people watched it. So we've seen that with Michigan State and their bowl games in recent years. So I still think you have the bowls, and then you just have 4 teams that are in the playoff instead. That's how I would do it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and people have talked about just having the top 4 ranked teams go at it. That would be good. And now, of course, we have to wonder if it's one of schools from those smaller conferences has a great year and somehow stays unbeaten and gets up into the bowl system. Do you want one of those teams, or do you want a 1 or 2 team loss team? I mean, that's the other equation. We'll probably have to factor that in at some time.
Right. Well, it's something that they're going to have to figure out the way to do it. And unfortunately, what they've done is they've just made everything far more complicated than it needed to be over the years, and created a lot of headaches for themselves. So we'll see what the formula ends up being.
Yes. Hey, Mike, let's talk about the Tigers. Have you been watching a lot of them? I mean, you know, we've been they're definitely not playing up to the expectations that so many people want them to. But they're still a good team, and they're playing okay. But really, I know, as you probably know as well, they're not playing up to the level of expectations that people thought they'd be playing to.
No, and part of the problem is people expect them to go, you know, 160 wins and 2 losses this year.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, being the media, I mean, we played a part in raising those expectations that they were going to blow everyone away in the division. I guess all I would say is that it's early. It's early, and Scherzer, until the last start, really struggled. Pitcher obviously has not been pitching. He pitched tonight, I believe. So, you know, if you take those guys away from the team, it's not a great team. I mean, if you have them on there, then potentially it is. They're not a great defensive team. They're not a great base running team. What they are is a team with a really deep, effective lineup, unbelievable power in the middle of the lineup, the best pitcher in baseball, and depth in their starting rotation. I still believe that's going to be enough to win a division. I'm not surprised they had a 24-25 game stretch, whatever it is now, like this during the season, and they may have another one. That doesn't mean that that this is who they are, that they're going to finish with, you know, 82, 85 wins. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so too, Mike. I think they're going to be fine. Yeah, I know people, I keep saying that, preaching patience. I guess we got to keep patience, hope for another month. I mean, by June, bottom part of June and July, they've got to start getting, if they don't have it together by then, they're going to have to start at least going in that direction, don't you think?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you.
Yeah, because this team is, hopefully it's a good team, and you know, hopefully they'll be better. They'll get better. You know, but that's the key to them, if they can just keep improving. I mean, after Fielder and Cabrera, the other hitters are there. You know, we don't talk about them much, but they're not really hitting that well. They're basically around the 280, 290, which is pretty good hitting. They're hitting pretty well, but they're not having the impact as hitters that a lot of people thought they would have, as far as getting on base and being base runners for the big guns.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at Brandon Bosch. I mean, they're counting on him to be a really good hitter for them, and he's not been. I do think Austin Jackson has really turned a corner. He looks like a different hitter. He's more patient. He's got a better approach at the plate, I think, a better he's cut down that kick, that leg kick, which really was causing them a lot of strikeouts. So I do think you're seeing him sort of fulfill his potential at the moment. Andy Dirk's a good player, probably not quite as good as his slugging numbers at the moment. But they need these other guys to come around. I mean, Delvin Young, obviously, in many ways, has had a disaster of a season. And Bosch, you know, let's face it, Bosch has had some long stretches in his career where he's not hit, and then he's had long stretches where he did hit. The Tigers sort of, in their minds, he's the guy who hits. Well, I think reality is he's a guy who has hot and cold streaks.
Another one who's had he's finally getting a little bit lukewarm is Albert Pujols. He finally broke out and got a home run after 100-something at-bats. I think about 111 at-bats. He finally broke through. And we can also put in there guys who changed leagues, and looking at Prince Fielder, who changed league as well. He struggled a little bit, not as much as Pujols has struggled, but guys that change leagues and have to adapt to all that new pitching. That's it looks like it's a problem for most guys when they have to switch leagues and learn a lot of new pitching staff, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I think there's a few problems Pujols has had. I think switching leagues is a problem. I think the expectations of the contract are just different.
Yes.
He's going from, you know, the best home fans really in all of baseball in St. Louis to having to prove himself all over again.
Yep.
I also think if you look at his numbers from last year, he was not the same hitter last year. I don't care what anyone says, he was not the same hitter last year that he had been for the 8 or 9 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think he's on a decline. I thought that contract was foolish. He's obviously a lot better than he's shown so far. I still expect him to put up pretty good numbers this year, but for 10 years to expect him to fulfill that contract, you know, maybe for 3 or 4 he can do it. For 10, there's just no way. Prince Fielder is younger than he is, and the Tigers overpaid for him, but at least he's got a shot at it. I don't see any way Pujols justifies that contract.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, because I said 10 years, maybe 5, 6, or 7 years might, and you figure that he'll probably be good, assuming he'll be good for 4 or 5 years, and then maybe he can DH the last 2 or 3 years of it. That's a possibility, but boy, yeah, I can't see him anyway justifying that whole contract. And now that, you know, he's off to such a slow start, you know, you look at all these years, and can he hit 30 home runs this year? That's going to be a challenge from here on out, being that he just got his first one to hit 29 the rest of the way. That's going to be a big challenge for him.
Yeah, and, you know, the home run thing was obviously disturbing for him, but he's not a pure home run hitter. So to me, what was more concerning was that he's just not hitting, period. He's not getting on base. He's apparently swinging at everything. I would imagine he'll settle down, get some of that plate system back. And again, I think his numbers for this year will turn out to be all right. He may have a better year next year, but you're seeing a player who's already started to decline, and that may, he may be able to slow the decline, but the decline will eventually happen to him. I don't understand that deal. It was very much unlike the Angels to do it.
Yes, we're going to see a lot more players declining if they get those long-term deals. I mean, hopefully the owners will wise up and maybe not pay out that kind of money over 10 years, or they'll try to limit themselves to paying out for 4 or 5 years. I don't know why they feel they have to give out a 10-year contract no matter how good they are. I wouldn't give out a 10-year contract to anyone. I would say 5 years, maybe 6 years at the most, and that would be it. If they don't want that, then hey, I tell them, hey, go find a team somewhere else. We're not giving out any 10-year contract, because you're going to be liable for that 4 or 5 years if they quit or if they retire. You know, you're liable for the rest of that contract, and it just doesn't seem like it would be worth it.
Well, the conventional wisdom in baseball is that you need to get you're going to eat that contract. You know, you're going to lose on it in the last year or two of a deal when you sign a free agent, and the idea is just to limit your exposure on that end, but you will have some. And there's a lot of guys you look at and you think, okay, a 4-year deal makes sense for him. You know they're going to get 5 or they're going to get 6, because the teams feel like they have to do that to get the player.
Yeah.
And that just, they just understand, they assume the risk for the last 2 year or two of the deal. That's sort of the cost of doing business. I just think 10 years is, you know, beyond that. To me, 6 or 7 is one thing. I'm with you.
Yeah, because 10 years that's crazy. Just like they're debating on Roberto Luongo's contract, with that he has, which is he's in 2009. He's saying that 15-year deal, and some hockey players are seeing these big contracts of theirs. Some people think they're overpaid, and they are in some ways. When you give a person that kind of a contract, boy, you really hamstrung yourself and your own payroll and your own system.
Right. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and that's going on. Well, one thing we can talk good about is the old Detroit Lions. They had a decent draft. It looks like it was okay. So, what did you think about the Lions in their draft choices, Mike?
You know what? It's such a talker, and I know we all try to reach conclusions with the draft. And the truth is, you don't know for years, and if we're honest, we don't really know now, do we?
Right. No, we don't.
It's kind of a hard one to figure out. But I do think you can start to look at a couple things. What you can look at is the top two players, if you know much about them, and then you can look at the approach to the draft. To me, getting Riley Reiff, who is considered one of the top tackles, maybe even the top tackle in the draft, fulfilling a need and getting value at the top spot was huge. After that, I guess I just have to wait and see. I know people didn't like the Broyles pick with the receiver. One thing I can say, he can definitely play. I mean, I saw enough from college that if he's healthy, he can play. I didn't think they should have taken Tyus Young last year for that reason, but that worked out all right. So, if you're right about the player, that erases a lot of the concerns. So I guess we'll see. I gave him a positive grade because I thought the Reiff pick was as good as they could have hoped for going into the draft.
Yes, I would agree with you on that because Reiff, he's a solid lineman, and they needed a good lineman because, as we know, they've got to replace Jeff Backus eventually, and maybe this year, or this might be Backus's last year, but, Reiff, it looks like he'll be a 10-year lineman when he gets his shot in there and, getting rid of, just making a room for him and getting ready to run Backus out of town is putting it in a polite way, but Backus has been a better lineman than what a lot of people have thought. Sure, he made some mistakes at time, but for the most part, he's done a pretty good job at offensive line.
He has been an excellent, maybe strong, but he has been very, very solid at a position that's tough to fill for a long time. And he's not been a Pro Bowler, but he's been midway, whatever. Certainly, just a solid player. And frankly, the Lions had Jeff Backus is all over the field with that kind of toughness and attitude and talent level for the last dozen years, and then they would have made the playoffs more than once.
Oh, for sure. Hey, Mike, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and congratulations with your new gig at Sports Illustrated. And I know we'll always look forward to reading you in SI coming up. So congratulations to you again, Mike.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Mike, and we'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye.
Take care.
Okay, and that's Michael Rosenberg from the Sports Illustrated now, and formerly with the Free Press. He says he'll be with the Free Press for a couple more weeks. You can read Michael Rosenberg, then it's off to Sports Illustrated. Give us a call. We're almost out of time. Just got a couple of minutes left. And Aaron, what do you see with football season and the playoffs coming up? And all the injuries and stuff, we've talked about that the last couple of weeks. So what is your take on all of this with all of these injuries? And we heard the people today calling in, talking with their concern about injuries. What do you see about that? Especially, we never really talked that much about it in college, but it does start in college or in high school for the most part.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, they do. They teach them, you got to play hurt, you got to play injured, whatever the case is, which is it just blows my mind. That's how the game is played. And frankly, I don't think it's going to get any better. I think it's just going to get worse. And if you're making more games, making players play more games at the college level, obviously there's more risk there. And if some of these players want to go pro or are able to go pro, that's something to think about. They're probably going to get a bigger chance to get injured and completely ruin their career. And, you know, if football is all they have, well, we've just seen what happened to, you know, a recent NFL player. He didn't have football, and he didn't know what to do with his life. So, you know, that's something they got to think about. But frankly, I think they'll just ignore it and move on.
Yeah, that's a good chance they may do that. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870, Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoon and give us a call at Talk Sports with us right here on WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.